Well, I had to bring this wonderful person with me to my porch, my virtual porch, to talk about some important issues. Welcome, Rita Wirtz.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for inviting me today. I'm really excited.
Well, you sent me your books. I mean, you're a very prolific writer. You also write the most amazing blog. And that's one of the things why we wanted to talk about this.
Thank you.
And your podcast, Let's Get Real. Oh, my goodness. I, you know, it's almost like when I've been talking to you, and we've been talking a lot, by the way.
Yeah. Kindred spirits. There's a lot of us kindred spirits. We need each other.
Oh, well, this is a real important time. And that's why when we started talking, it was almost like, you know, I've been there, you've been there, and you're hearing from the same people. And oh my goodness, what are we going to do? And then you wrote this blog, Why Teachers Are Leaving Now.
Yes.
One of the things you talked about was a teacher on Twitter. Actually, why don't you explain that? Because that was just amazing.
Oh, boy. He's still in my heart. I almost need to get Kleenex. I've been listening, really listening with intent, as you have been. And I know, Barbara, that people contact you directly as they do me. Many times people don't want to put it out in front of Twitter or any social media. It's very private, very personal. But I've been hearing the same thing. Exhausted. I'm burned out. I'm beyond that. And on Twitter yesterday, it was Bethany Hill who wrote, it's more than that. It's a crisis. It's more than being exhausted and burned out. So what happened was one teacher got to me, one teacher, because she left. She wrote in this series, I'm new to this job, but not to teaching, but I'm teaching children who have a label of autism. And I was told to do this. I was told to do this. And I do that. And then that wasn't right. And that wasn't right. And nothing's right. And I'm not getting support. And I'm exhausted. And that about. And after this series of comments that she made, she wrote to Mark Weston. And she said, shift paradigm handle on Twitter. And she said, Mark, I'm leaving. It's for my mental health. Maybe I can come back in December. I don't want to leave the children, but I can't do it anymore. I cannot do it anymore. And that just got to me that we can't be sending out our outstanding teachers, whether they're year one and need a lot of support. How can you start during this situation? And teachers that have been teaching, like the guy who commented the other day, I've been teaching 35 years and I've never seen such misbehavior. And I thought, well, what are we expecting? You know, are we thinking that after being gone for a year and a half, doing what they want, and those that were engaged fully with remote learning did great, and children who might be more introverted, let us say, they might have done great. Many children did great. Many teachers did great, but did they? We've been, as teachers, we've been band-aiding and just keep going through, pushing through. The only way is through, Robert Frost. And we've been pushing through. I've never worked harder than I have this past year and a half. And yet I'm not a classroom teacher anymore, not for the last few years. Preschool was the last I was able to teach. But Barbara, we need to get this out there that they are not alone. And we get it. It's just, what are we going to do next? And that's where I am right now. And in the blog that I hope to post today that I worked on all last week, this is for Let's Get Real also. And I talked about school within a school and accelerated learning. And let's break out of the box, because this box is very challenging right now.
I agree with you. I've been getting cries, calls, issues of, it's unbelievable what they want me to do, the teachers and administrators also. It's not just teachers. Mm-hmm. And I'm even hearing from resource teachers to say, I'm sorry, we need you to take more children, or there's no subs. This is the thing that's really hard right now, is there are no subs. So teachers are giving up their prep time. It's so scary that they're doubling up. Mm-hmm. But then they're expecting more.
Well, let me interject, because we're right there. We're always mirroring each other these days, Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a high school math teacher the other day, and she was pretty teary over here. She came to pick up her daughter. We have a very tiny pod for my granddaughter of about 2 kids she's allowed to see, literally. So when I was talking to the teacher, I said, well, how are you doing? And she goes, well, I haven't had a prep period in months. And so all day yesterday on a Sunday, she was prepping at home. And so I said, well, what's going on? I said, what about your contract? And she said, here it is. In our teacher contract, it said, in an emergency, we can sub. And our district is calling this an emergency. And so in effect, they're not worried about subs. The teachers are covering everybody else's classes, and it's beyond burnout. It's beyond exhaustion, and it's not fair. So as a teacher, how would you feel if all of a sudden you have no prep period, and then you're also constantly going into other classes and again, more possible exposures?
Well, I have been hearing that since for some time, because some schools went back last spring, and then they have had other issues because there are still people that don't believe in the mask. They don't believe in vaccines and things like that. So there's other issues, like people are coming to the school board and attacking the school board. Yeah. And so when a teacher has an issue, the administration is like so overwhelmed with demands from all over the place. They don't know really what to do either. And this issue about learning loss, I mean, I keep saying, let's just talk about this. The whole world has had learning loss. Right. The problem are the inequities that have been exposed, which actually there are some things about the COVID. Those things needed to be exposed and we need to address them. And so in some places, they've been giving more support with resources, some places. Some places figured out, we fed our kids, so they did grab and go. They've looked at the food that they're giving. There's more people have been helping. There are some good things that came out of this, but it's opened up a whole thing about what is education anyway.
Yes. Well, teachers have always, and administrators, as a former principal, I can vouch for the fact that teachers have always given of themselves to feed and clothe children and make sure they were taken care of. Schools have always been a garden for the heart. Schools have always been the center of their community. Mm-hmm. And now is a perfect time to do even more so, to consider it that way. Schools have always been underfunded. We know that from the time I was a principal and before. And when I worked as a curriculum consultant at the County Office of Education, model curriculum standards in California were just coming out. And at that time, I was a little concerned, but not really. But I'm really concerned now that teachers not only have to make sure that we find where the kids are that aren't at school, and then when we have the kids that are at school, do we really want to say learning loss? Don't think so. I look at learning gains and the fact that we've always met kids where they are. But Barbara, when we talk about that learning loss idea and where it came from and the whole thing about recovery, I don't know that we're recovering from the right things. Because if we call the normal that we had before a good normal, I don't know what that normal really was. And now is our time to really reconceptualize this thing we call school and what learning is. And this is a perfect time. I call it challenging times, extraordinary opportunities.
I saw that on the post that you wrote. The thing that I have seen is what has happened with families. Families ended up really appreciating teachers. They had no idea
for a while.
But it's
the
changed.
The NCAA survey, in 20 in the spring, everybody loved teachers. And by the fall, not so much.
No, I was going to say that. but the thing that has happened is this is an opportunity that we can capitalize on the community. How do we bring the community back together and look at schools as community learning centers and bring in, you know, strategies for especially young mothers with young children who don't really have childcare and don't have support, who people are balancing work and trying to balance their home lives, and same with teachers. We just need to really look at the whole picture on how we as a community can support the people in our community.
Well, one thing is that teachers have side hustles, not all, but many. So
well,
when we talk about, right, but let's go there for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world, Barbara, can we expect teachers to be members of the community and participate with the community, bring in the community, which we want to see maybe through project-based learning, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But those teachers that go out and the parents see them being a waitress at night till 11 or a DoorDash delivery, if they don't have prep time and they go home and have their own mm-hmm. families and then they've got to do a second job, how could this be sustainable?
Okay, so I have worked in other states and I saw something in Kentucky that was amazing. This was some time ago. The governor said we need innovation centers. And so mm-hmm. what they did is they had the districts apply. Now the districts are small. These aren't very large districts, but they had the districts apply for innovation grants and they would waive all the tests. And they said they would have that for 5 years if they can prove that there were learning gains, but there was also innovative strategies. And what happened is they did a lot of project-based, they did passion projects, they yeah. changed and made innovation hubs. Mm-hmm. We need to look at why are we, when I worked with some schools in California and some other states, they have way too many standards and they're yeah. teaching to the test and they're not looking at what, you know, how children learn and look at what ways we can get it so they can learn on their own. They can have their own voice, their choice, and give them some ownership of the process instead of being accountable and responsible for what they learn. And so those are the things, this is the reason why I wrote my other books on personalized learning and this why on Define Your Why was because I said we need to own it so we can be responsible citizens. Right now, we don't give them those opportunities and we put it all on the shoulders of teachers.
Tiring.
It's so tiring.
It's so tiring. If children really have their voices heard, then we're really back at the notion of constructivism. Children as knowledge workers, the children are the ones that are creating what they need and want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Corollary would be teachers having the opportunity to design their own staff development. And what do I need to know as a teacher? And then mm-hmm. where can I get it? Otherwise, teachers often walk with their feet. They don't want to be there. It's just sit time in an academy. They have no interest in, or it's not going to help them. As far as engaging families with the teachers, I think teachers have worked really diligently to bring families back in. And one of the issues would be equity, as you mentioned, that there wasn't a level playing field before, and it just showed mm-hmm. more of the discrepancies. So while we're looking at that idea of learning loss and recovery and catching them up, that gave schools a couple of days to really build relationships. And then wham, we're back with number two lead pencils. We're testing fluency. They're getting grouped and stuck where they probably don't belong. This is a time where there should be fluidity. We mm-hmm. should be, in my opinion, teaming with a vertical look at the spiral curriculum, a horizontal look as far as our own team members at our levels that we're working at. But this idea of lockstep gradedness, it really doesn't work now. And this is a time mm-hmm. to really get rid of it. We need to rethink time, the use of time, the use of space, the mm-hmm. use of personnel. We could be outside. We could be in quads. We could be in gyms. Learning is everywhere. But we need to have multiple ways of moving kids back and forth with teachers. This is my opinion, of course. But I've seen it happen, and we did it while I was a principal, so I know it works.
Yeah.
Looping and ideas that have been around for years and years work.
Yeah, and co-teaching. I'm very fortunate to have worked with schools kind of internationally mm-hmm. where they say yeah. it really helps if you have multiple teachers available mm-hmm. for children. Yeah. So when they make choices or when they're working in groups or when they need individual help, there are yeah. different people that can support them. And the problem is that teachers are usually siloed by grade level or age behind a door, and then they don't even get to talk to other teachers, especially now if they don't have prep time. So we need to pull them together.
If the teachers have an opportunity to see experts, it's the experts down the hall. It's mm-hmm. not somebody coming in. And I understand that because I did that. I was a trainer and I did seminars across the country. But what was most successful for me was when I went into the classrooms and taught with the teachers. I did the same thing when I was a principal. Today, as busy as principals are, and here we are in principal month, they still have to figure out a way to get out of the office and be phantoms all over the campus. Mm-hmm. They have to be in classrooms, and co-teaching would be a great idea so they can read the room, as I used to do, and then boom, you're ready, and you teach a lesson with or without the teacher. Co-teaching is fabulous. Team teaching.
Well, the fun thing I've seen, there are several places where they were building new schools, and there was one high school where there was no principal's office. They okay. decided that the principal would be, you know, be able to walk around, but they had this room that anybody could come into, the teachers could come, and anyone could schedule it. And yeah. that could be a place for collaborative planning and working together. But mm-hmm. the principal was, you saw the principal walking down the hall, right. knew everybody's name. That's the other thing. It's really important to know each child and each teacher. What happens is sometimes people, like you said, they're not heard or seen or valued. Well, if we really spend time building the relationships and building a community that really trusts and respects each other, then everyone feels valued.
Well, we're talking school culture here for sure. You brought it up. So let's go there just for a moment. in a thriving school culture, the principal is all over the place. The principal is in classrooms and not just leaving a cursory note. And that's great, but not enough. We need to have people have time to work together. And that's where we need to reconfigure. Now, we had 18 months to do this. We really had the time as a nation, as a collective body, let's say. We could have. The best minds have always been here, and we've had these same ideas. In the 90s, the concept of community school was very strong, mm-hmm. and I think that that's where we need to be right now. There's no reason why we can't be helping families help their children at home, for those who can. But I'm still really concerned about where the kids are to begin with. They're not all back at school. Mm-mm. So the culture, it always is going to come back to a culture that the kids want to come back to. They wouldn't be doing TikTok challenges or wanting to slap a teacher's butt, excuse me.
Oh, I've heard that.
Part of the culture.
Well, see, the thing is that kids are on, they're on this phone all the time. Yes. And this is their life now. That's how they connect. We need to use it. We need to look at using the tools and resources so we can bring people together instead of building these silos and making it so we know more than them or vice versa. So, exactly. Yeah, I love the idea of community schools, and I did work in areas where they did that. I've been lucky to travel internationally and see schools all mm-hmm. over. And one of the things that I noticed is when teachers have time to collaborate, when teachers also let go, and then in New Zealand, Pam Moran was sharing some of the things they did in the schools in Virginia, is that they would put 100 kids in a class and they would have four teachers, and then they would have multiple areas where they could collaborate, they could work individually, they could work with in a small group with one teacher. It's just, we need to really look at the models, but we also need to look at why we keep on doing the same thing that's not working. Why do we keep
same
it?
Thing, same results. Same oh. thing, same results. In the idea of the school, then the school that I've been working with and writing now, It's exactly what you're talking about. You take about 125 kids, for example, at this be the high school level, and it is shared, completely shared. But I'm looking even bigger than that, that we need to rethink the whole use of time in schools. Start end times. There has to be more of a, you can come this and stay these many hours and do this during that time, and this you can do on your own, and this is with the community. So the use of time is really important. Also, bells are very annoying. I would, bells and lining kids up. I don't know. I just got to the point where I'd say, hey, teachers, if you want to just let the kids walk down and they're behaving fine, they're not hitting each other. There's less problems when you don't have lines. When you have lines, they're too close, especially now, and they're hitting one another. And then they're being sent to the principal for not behaving. So we need to rethink some of these things, in particular, the use of time, the use of space. The whole curriculum needs to be looked at again. What should we be teaching? Should be cutting the standards about in half. And the assessment needs to go. It doesn't tell teachers anything.
I know places like Finland and other and New Zealand, and they've changed so that there's no standardized test in certain places in the world. And some places we have PISA, and we have others that they they're trying to figure out where people are. But what I did see, which was kind of interesting in New Zealand, is I saw kids walking around with a learner license.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool. They, I have pictures of it. I could share that with you if you want. But the I asked one, it's a year seven, which means that they might be in multiple grades, but this is where they are. And what they said, that they had to demonstrate that they are responsible for their learning. And I think that if we give kids that opportunity to demonstrate, even at a young age, show that I want to do this and I can generate some of my own curriculum based on what I want to learn, but it, they could tie it to standards. We can show them how to do that if we still use the standards. The problem are the tests and the way that we're, as you know, teachers are mandated to make sure that you teach to the test by a certain time, which what it does, it doesn't, it just throws creativity and curiosity out the window.
Well, I'm vehemently opposed to scripted programs to begin with. I've been very vocal about that. Some teachers like scripted programs because they find that there's a continuity for them. I don't know why else. I really don't. But I know some teachers do like it. The issue I have is fidelity. When we want teachers or actually demand that teachers have fidelity to any particular scripted program, then we are holding teachers back from the art and craft of teaching. They didn't go into teaching to follow a script and to be on the same page as the teacher next door. How would you do that now anyway? What we want to see is them getting together in teams. Again, it's got to be vertical, above and below if we're still at traditional grade levels. It has to be horizontal at the same time. That's not anything outrageous. That's what needs to happen.
And I'm so lucky. I worked with Pinellas County Schools in Tampa, where we had cross-curricular, cross-age. We had six-week projects around the science standards. And what was so cool, there were six of these projects. And the it's amazing what the kids did. And they designed it with the teachers. See, and some of these are still going on, even though, you know, they there's a lot of emphasis on meeting the standards. But it's just, I think, I just wish we could throw out and show what's happening. Well, not even start over. Look at what was working before, before No Child Left Behind, before Race to the Top, before all of these.
That's what I meant by a start over. Because if you look all the way back to the history of reform and the foundations of education, we can see that every single innovation that came in failed. I never used the word failed, and I just caught myself saying it because it is true, they didn't work. Children have been left behind more than ever, but left behind what? What are they supposed to learn? And to get to here, we have to do this and this and this, but where is the here? How do you know now where the here is?
See, you know what? This is the, I love talking like this. This is so cool.
I know.
All right. So the issue that I have is we may get these our beautifully smart, amazing children prepared to for the tests and understand content, but they're not prepared for the real world.
Yes.
And then what happens is they're lost. They don't know if they maybe go into a school for a major that they didn't even want. Oh. Or what they find out later, they're stuck with this gigantic student debt and they're not happy. And we need to figure out before they get to that point, or they don't go to college and they figure some other ways, which it, sometimes is they need that. But the problem is it demands on them. The demands on our kids are ridiculous. And so what I'm scared of is the stress that I'm seeing from young children now. I'm seeing depression more. And I've had parents call me to say, you know, do I know a referral of someone who can help me with my child? I'm so scared. And I'm like, this is beyond me.
Yes.
This is something we have to take care of.
Well, we said that social emotional learning would be at the forefront when children went back to school, but they didn't put money there. The money came and they bought programs, more scripted programs. Again, that's a blanket statement. But what I had hoped to see was, of course, work on class sizes. Didn't happen. They're huge in many cases. Mm-hmm. I'd hoped that they'd work on ventilation. You and I have both been in schools that were deteriorating before, don't have open windows even. Mm-hmm. So I'd hoped it would happen. And I also hoped the money would go toward a counselor, a nurse, a psychologist, a social worker for every school. And the larger schools needed more staff. Teachers can't do all this. How in the world?
Well, even the public health department is kind of not, they don't have funding. And so here we have COVID and we have mandates and we have a lot of, and teachers are stuck trying to figure out what their job is and what schools are concerned. They don't know what to do. So I have a sister who has a doctorate of public health. And she's trying to share with me how we used to have a larger public health department. We used to have nurses in every school.
Always.
We used to have counselors available, and we don't have them now. And the mental health issue is so big.
Well, that's number one, is our children's well-being. The emotional needs have been what's been problematic for teachers, because all of a sudden, not only are they expected to, quote, catch kids up, but they know that they have to deal with the emotional and the mental health of their children. Maslow, then Dewey, then Bloom. And it has to be that, but we are jumping in. And that's where I see the stress increasing, that children aren't behaving because they don't want to sit. They weren't sitting before. And if they were on Roblox or Minecraft, they were learning. They were doing dramatic play. They were engaged with each other, and they were in the flow state. They were in the flow, and now they're back in school, and we're going, now get on task. But that's the lowest state of learning. We want them, of course, engaged in flow. If we did passion projects, maker spaces, genius hour all day, every day, that would work okay in even a self-contained classroom. But otherwise, I say that we need to seriously reconsider the use of what we talked about, cross-age, cross-lateral, and teaming, and moving kids back and forth, all the way back to Susan Kovalik, all the way back to thematic curriculum. This is not new.
Well, I'd even go back to Paulo Freire. I can't even say, I mean, when he said the pedagogy of the oppressed, I mean, the issue is we set up school to fail. It was set up in 1896 to put them in everybody. So how do we look at and rethink what is school and rethink learning.
Rethink learning. I was going there and you got me.
Well, that's why,
I know. We need to rethink learning, the whole nature and conceptualization of what learning is and how kids get there.
Yeah. And the issue, I mean, I can tell you one school in South Dakota that it's Harrisburg South Middle School. Darren Elwin, he's been on my podcast, but he also wrote a book called The Revolution. And it's about changing everything. And he wrote it with another principal, McCoy. I can't remember. All of a sudden, Derek McCoy. Yeah. And they actually changed their whole, they make a I Choose Day. So the kids choose what they want to learn and what projects they want to work on. And it's middle school. So that's a tough place to do this. If they, you know what I mean? The kids right. really love it. But they also have a student scheduler. The students wow. schedule mm-hmm. themselves using the, it's a personalized learning tool that's worked with them to create it. So I know there are places all over like that that are doing amazing projects, but they're also struggling because now mandates are coming in because of COVID and people are pulling back. So I'm trying to reach out. That's why I want the stories. That's why I want to have the conversations like with you and others. And because I feel we need to know that they're not, teachers need to know they're not alone. And we got to talk about this. But administrators and school systems and states are all thinking about this, but they got to start thinking realistically or we're going to have back to where we started. We have too many shortages and people are leaving the profession.
Well, let's go back also to what I know you wanted to talk about today. And we don't have to spend a lot of time on it or berate it, but critical race theory needs to come in here. The banning of books is happening very rapidly now. I can't keep up with what I'm writing anymore. That and what we talk about in the classroom being censored is a great concern to me. I know you were interested in what I wrote about the teacher who was fired for teaching a course the same way he had taught it since 2010.
It was a contemporary issues.
Yeah, contemporary issues class. This man, Matthew Hahn, he is, to me, emblematic of what our teachers are facing right now, because not only do we have the issues we've already talked about teachers are facing, the health needs, like the virus, regular colds and flus and kids putting stuff in their mouth, all this is regular school stuff. COVID added a new dimension. But we have another dimension here, and that is that these same teachers who are working beyond miracle workers have to deal with the fact now they have to watch what they say in the classroom. Because if there's anything in the new legislation that's occurring throughout many states now, it was at 8, but it's gaining by the day, they are not allowed to teach anything that makes another child in that class uncomfortable in any way. Now, that could be almost anything that a teacher said. I mean, if we're really teaching what happened, that mm-hmm. slavery existed, it happened. The Holocaust happened. If that makes someone uncomfortable, then hypothetically, back as a teacher, not as a principal or administrator, I could be on the hot seat. And if I stand up for myself and I'm not fearful, well, I could end up losing my position. And there goes my benefits. What's my family going to do? Can I get another job? This is pretty scary stuff.
I think we need another talk about that. I guess what's concerning me, because I've been talking to Hedrick Nichols and some others about Basil Marin and JT Taylor, we had a talk on about these also. Mm-hmm. My real concern is that teachers are like, Barbara, I'd like to talk to you, but I don't want to put it on a podcast. I don't want to put it on Twitter. I'm afraid to put it out there. And I was telling you, I said, we need to have some places where we can talk about this. This has to change. This is America. We can't be, we can't keep people from sharing their voices and their opinions, but we can also protect people when I'm just scared for us right now. This is a real tenuous time and teachers need to be able to really talk about contemporary issues without worrying about what's going to happen to them. And the problem is how do you have these good conversations? And I've been lucky to talk to Juliana Taffer, who did she's a filmmaker, and she did a film called Listen. It won many, many awards. And it was basically how to listen to someone you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to teach how to talk and how to listen, how to empathize. Maybe you don't agree. We can agree not to agree. But we also need to know that we are safe. like you said.
And getting to yes, if teachers don't feel safe, which I don't think they do, then we have a bigger problem than anything. Because how in the world, they've got to self-regulate their own emotions, their own intellectual needs, how to cover classes. They don't even have time to go to the bathroom. It's always been problematic. Do you run copies or do you go to the bathroom? Do you get a lunch or do you help the student in the classroom? That piece of pie isn't new. But it's the overwhelming notion that teachers did not recover from what happened last year. I was in a third grade classroom the last day of school. Just so happened I was teaching at the back table. I wrote a little vignette about it. All of a sudden, a kid comes from the front of the room and he jumps on my lap. Okay, no problem. And then 2 minutes later, there's another little boy runs out and he's outside in the hallway banging his head on the wall. And I'm like, whoa. I was seeing so much concerning behavior toward the end of that period. There was already a feeling of unease and kids were sick that day. There was coughing and sneezing and all. And I'm like, I just knew that things were not good, that it wasn't going to be okay. And as we grabbed our stuff and left that day, I didn't know it was going to be the last day. None of the teachers did, but I had a feeling. You had a feeling. And then that school ended up getting demolished. They closed and demolished it to make room for another school move over. So all those kids not only lost their school and their friends, their teachers, and then went remote and then couldn't even start at another new school because they started remote one year like that. So many of our children, my point of getting to, may have had six teachers. When you see the chart that's floated around Twitter and Facebook about if you're in fifth grade, you're really like still in second. Well, behaviorally, they may be because they don't know how to behave anymore. Not, I don't mean when I say behave in a rigid way. I'm talking about they're not having learning behaviors to be able to concentrate, to focus, to keep their attention long enough on a task. So many lessons are certainly in order. I would be teaching in chunks with a set and close all day long. Mm-hmm. And again, children's choice has to be important. If we can't reconceptualize fast enough, then what can we do at a minimum right now to make a difference?
So I'm very lucky. I work with Digital Promise with the micro-credentials. I'm an assessor. And there's one, I don't want to mention a district, but they basically are doing facilitating class meetings. And what I'm seeing is a change in culture by this one micro-credential, because in it, it talks about developing the relationship in the beginning, getting what do you do every day in a daily meeting to find out where they are and how they're feeling and what emotions. And it's amazing just to watch how the teacher is changing just with that one micro-credential. You see, we don't need to do, there's like little things we can do. Yeah. By just taking some time in the beginning of every day, one, to kind of pause ourselves and to be grateful for who we are and to love ourselves, but also to take some time to listen and let kids share who they are and get to know each of the kids in the class, even if it's on Zoom. You know what I mean? We have to, or Google Meet or whatever. We got to get back those relationships. And mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I have to say my porch is closing pretty soon, but
the porch has been very busy this morning. We've opened some doors, certainly, in and out, many things. I do want to add one last thing to what you said. For several years, now I'm a big believer in morning meetings and class meetings, always have been, and students as conflict managers, if they get trained how to, and that is a trained word because that is sort of prescriptive so they don't even mess up relationships out on the playground. Yeah. And in any event, the thing about morning meetings, and when I kept hearing, we shouldn't do them, they're wasting time, we need to get right on to task. I'm like, oh, no. A morning meeting or an afternoon, whenever we have a class meeting, it sets the tone. I agree with you. It sets the stage. And also at that time, we either find out the schema or their prior knowledge that they have about what we want to be working with that day or that period, or we build it. We just stop and build it if they don't have it. And so I really like using realia or actuals, whatever terms we want for objects and things that came from home. We start with stories and anecdotes. The set is so critically important. Before we let them loose on anything, we need to have that time together as part of the culture, the community culture of that room. And then they'll be very protective of it.
And it helps the teacher too. Because what happens is we're under so much pressure as teachers. All right, and I'm not a teacher now, but I am in life.
Yes, you are.
We're both teachers. But the thing that I find when I spend time, whenever I do my podcasts, I spend some time getting to know the person beforehand. So I can have a really good conversation. Why can't we do the same with our kids?
And that's where class size comes back in too, Barbara. Mm-hmm. If the kids are in the 30 size class right now, their emotional needs are
even bigger.
Even bigger.
Oh, I don't want to go. I love our talk. Thank
you. I'm going to go write an article on global education. So,
this is wonderful.
I'm still having a fun day. But Barbara, meeting you is a joy in my life. For everybody, I know, get the feels. For everybody out there who might be listening, I just don't even know what to say other than we're here for them. And we've been at it a long time, 50 years. I can't believe I'm still here. Teaching preschool was the most joyous experience in my life, especially having started in high school. And those memories are with me every day. I wish I could still be there right now. Because that's the joy. And so if we keep the joy in learning, like we see in the littles, and we use them for the bigs, and we teach more through play right now, we're all going to have a good time. Thanks, Barbara.
So before we go, I'm just going to say challenging times may be extraordinary opportunities.
Sure,
we can do it.
We can do it. Yes, you can.
Thanks, Barbara. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Later, alligator. Ha ha ha.